to be able to look within without taking anything for granted and without stopping. A continuous questioning without assuming. That seems to be the pattern that emerges from the Upanishads. I am not allowed to take anything for granted, but I am not allowed to stop questioning. If you put these two together, you discover that a certain amount of faith is necessary, and that faith must be constantly accompanied by a certain amount of constructive doubt. Not a destructive doubt, questioning doubt. A doubt that does not doubt the possibility, but doubts the immediate reality. It's a double-edged sword, and it's so sharp, the razor's edge, that it's difficult to see. I must have faith that there is perhaps something beyond this, because the master says so. When I question him, the master says that there is something other than this. I must have faith in that, but I shouldn't assume that I have got it. I shouldn't assume that what I am seeing is not true. Without assuming that this is the ultimate truth, final truth, I must look forward to the discovery that to the master is the truth. To him it is truth, not for me. To me this is true. I don't want to assume that he is right. I don't want to assume that I am right. What you call an open mind and open heart. But through that open mind and through that open heart, there is this razor sharp intelligence. Drishyate tu agriya buddhya buddhya sukshmya sukshma darshibhi. There is a beautiful expression in one of the Upanishads, that though the self is omnipresent, nobody sees it, because it needs an extremely sharp intelligence. It's not quite intellect. The awakened intelligence must at the same time be so sharp and so subtle seeing. It must be able to see through the gross and get into the subtle. Once again, that's the reason why they insist upon the qualifications. And I feel that the qualifications come to you as you go on in this, as you go on diving deeper and deeper and deeper into this, as the quest intensifies more and more and more, the qualifications are there. They don't come into you, they develop into you, or I don't know what happens. The qualifications cannot be acquired by purchase, and the qualifications cannot be assumed by visual thinking, but if the quest is intensified, the qualifications appear. I cannot deny the existence of the world, I cannot deny myself even the pleasures of the world. By abandoning them, by pushing them away, I am still contacting them. But if I engage myself in the quest of the truth, these things merely drop away. They lose their significance, they lose their importance. Then you are not struggling at all, they have dropped away, just like you are going to sleep. When you fall asleep, the world has dropped away, you didn't abandon it. When you fall asleep, the world has just dropped away, without being abandoned, without any struggle whatsoever. Can all these qualities and qualifications happen in a similar way? Then it is real. Otherwise, it is artificial. When these that is beautifully illustrated in the story, which occurs in one Upanishad called Taittiriya Upanishad. We merely took a quick look at it last week. Prajapati may have been the name of somebody, Mr. Prajapati, or His Holiness Prajapati, or it may be the as the commentators assume it is, the name of the creator, Brahma. In the case of the creator again, you can very well see the rule does not apply that the father does not teach the son. We are all the children of the creator, so we should all be inevitably be taught by his father. And this creator, Brahma, or what the Upanishad calls Prajapati, was discoursing upon self-knowledge. And he said, this self is beyond sin and suffering, self is beyond hunger and thirst, and its notions materialize. Very important to remember this. The notions that arise in the self materialize, not in the mind. Your thoughts do not materialize. The notions arise in the self, in the omniscient, omnipotent consciousness, which has materialized there as Richard. You didn't think yourself that way. If all of us were allowed to think ourselves into what we would like to be, we would all be, you know what, completely different, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's not I that thinks and produces this. It is not the mind that thinks and produces this. It is the self, it is the notion of the self that has become this. If I realize that, then I don't bluff myself into sort of, you know, visual thinking and positive thinking, negative thinking and all kinds of funny thinking. Those things don't happen. He sang the glories of self-knowledge. That the self is so wonderful that it is beyond sin and suffering, hunger and thirst, and all its notions, all the notions that arise in that consciousness materialize. So that the world that you see is a notion that exists in that consciousness. He who knows this rules the whole world. Nah, obvious. He who knows it becomes the ruler of the worlds. And there were two brothers, Cain and Abel, I guess. And they were both in the audience, listening to this. One was called Indra, and he was the head chief of the gods, and the other was called Virochana, the chief of the non-gods, the demons. I don't think, at the moment we are talking about, they had been classified as gods and demons. It comes just a little later. Both of them heard this, and they were really impressed by the fantastic claim. The master had said, if you have self-knowledge, you will become the ruler of the three worlds. It may even mean, the three worlds may even mean the three inner worlds, waking, dreaming and sleeping. Anyhow, they didn't go into all that. If you have self-knowledge, that will be added unto you. But if you are looking for that, this may not be added unto you. If you have self-knowledge, you may get psychic powers or whatever it is. But if you are looking for psychic powers, you won't get self-knowledge. This is the risk in pointing out the fruit or the result or the goal or the fringe benefits of any spiritual exercise. Then you are lost. I am looking for that. I reminded a funny story which took place in the ashram. Swami Shivananda was writing letters in his office. This was way back in 1946-47. A young man came and sat near him and looked up to him. The Swami, he was very free in those days. There's not too much of work to do. He said, "Swamiji, I have a question." It is said that in ancient days, sages used to engage themselves in austerities, penance, sometimes meditating and doing all sorts of things for thousands of years. Yes. And it is also said in the scriptures that when they did that, the gods used to be frightened. And they used to put obstacles on the path of these ascetics. And what were those obstacles? Usually they sent a couple of nice girls from heaven, celestial nymphs, to disturb this man's meditation, asceticism. He said, "Yes." "Does it happen even now?" "Does it happen even now?" And Swami Shivananda was tickled. He said, "What do you ask?" "If it happens even now, I would like to meditate also." They were meditating in order to see God or whatever it is. And that came as an obstacle. Here, the man is going to meditate on the nymphs. It may not happen, nothing may happen. This is the risk in assuming that we know what the goal of meditation is, or what the goal of yoga is. Then your attention is in the, upon the goal and not on the truth, on the reality, on the assumed goal, on the benefit or the result. So these two, Indra and Virochana, they were not interested in self-knowledge really, to begin with. They were more interested in the results. Though Indra very soon picked up something else. Both of them, it is said, joined the master's household as his servants. Because in those days, the master wouldn't talk to you unless you served him. And then achieved an atonement. If you are my teacher, and if I do not live with you, if I do not serve you, if I do not tune myself to you, I don't know even your language, you are talking something else. So, they went into the kitchen and started working there, and they lived like that for 32 years, before they asked the first question. 32 years of quiet service of the Guru, who is also the father and so on, Brahma, before asking the first question. Then after 32 years, Brahma called them and said, what do you want? What are you here for? Both of them said, "We would like the self-knowledge you are talking about." "Oh, that's easy." "Look into the mirror, what do you see?" "I see myself." "Ah, that's it." Or look into a basin of water, what do you see? I see myself, that's it. That which is in your eyes, that's it. That's the self. That which is in the eyes, that which I see in the... Both of them went away. One went this way, one went the other way. This virochana, to him it was quite clear. What did I see? I see this face, I see my dress, and I see all my adornments. And the father says, the guru says, that is the self. And that's obvious. So I must become strong, eat, drink, and be merry. Naturally, I'm happy, I'm healthy. If only I do some hatha yoga every morning. I'm free from suffering, I'm free from pain, I'm free from illness. If I abolish all ideas of virtue or thou shalt and thou shalt not, there is no sin. Also easy. All the problems are solved immediately. Get rid of your own notions of virtue and vice. There is no sin. Take care that you don't eat rotten food, or you don't starve, you don't fast. You eat the right kind of food at the right time. Do some yogasanas, you are healthy. And then engage yourself in exercise and so on. Gang up and fight, and everybody is conquered. That's it. Went away. Went to his followers and told them, this is the truth. Body is the self. This is the ultimate reality. Eat, drink, and be merry. Make it as strong as possible, and you can conquer the whole world. That's what the master said. When you listen to your discourse, you pick up only two or three sentences which seem to suit the mind. The rest of it is forgotten. Indra went away also. And as was the custom, he wanted to do some manana, sort of, you know, chew it, reflect. As he sat down to reflect, all that is true, yes. This is my body. If somebody pinches me, I am hurt. So obviously this is the self. But the old man also said, it's free from hunger and thirst. The body doesn't seem to be free from hunger and thirst. It is subject to old age and death and so on. Even if I avoid disease, illness, and pain, I can do all that. Even then it is subject to old age and death, hunger and thirst. What do you do in such a situation? You have been living with the Guru and silently, unostentatiously, almost unknown to the Guru, you are serving him for 30 years, 32 years. And then he gives you such a flippant advice, which seems to be totally illogical, unsatisfying. What do you do? Crook. I'll go and look at somebody else. Doesn't even know how to instruct me. Indra didn't do that. He went back to the master and said, I think I have misunderstood you. Something is not clear. Can you help me a little more? Not that you are wrong, but I have not understood correctly. I have not understood the teaching correctly. He said, okay, right, you are right. That you have not understood correctly is correct. Okay. Go back. Go into the household for another 32 years before you can ask the next question. The next 32 years. Then he came back. Yeah, what do you want? I want to know the self, self-knowledge. Aha. What happens to you when you go to sleep? I begin to dream. That is the self. Who is the dreamer? That is the self. That's right. That's not a problem, because that that the dreamer is not really affected by illness, the dreamer is not really affected by hunger and thirst and so on. You know, you may dream, but then you, when you wake up, all that is gone, went away. Apparently satisfied. Then once again he sat down to reflect upon it, there was some difficulties. It's not quite satisfying. There is still some unhappiness in dream, some sorrow in dream. And hunger and thirst are there in the dream, to the dreamer. There is still some suffering to the dreamer in the dream. Maybe he doesn't experience this after waking up, but that the old man didn't say. Still not quite clear. Came back to the guru. I think I have not understood correctly still. Okay, back. Another 32 years. Another 32 years. And after those 32 years, the Indra came back. And this is supposed to be Indra, the god of gods. Sort of, you know, the king of gods, the chief of gods. After the 32 years, which is 96, huh? Yeah, 96. Came back, and now, can I? You know, after you have finished dreaming, what do you do? I sleep soundly. That is the self. You said, I sleep soundly. That is the self. That is it. That is it. Who is it that sleeps soundly? Who sleeps? I sleep soundly. That's it. Indra said, right. That seems to be absolutely perfect. Because in deep sleep there is no sin and no suffering, no sorrow, no hunger, no thirst, no pain, no old age, no death, nothing. Went away. And once again reflected over this, all that is right, but then there is one little snag. I don't even know that. All that is true. But if it is self-knowledge, I am not even aware of it. There is nothing, no knowledge at all. How is total ignorance equal to self-knowledge? Something. Some misunderstanding. Went back to the guru again. Sir, this is some problem. Can you help? A little more. Still some problem. It's all right. Back. But this time only for 5 years.
Yeah. How old was he when he started?
So, 101 now. 96 plus 5. Go back for another 5 years and come up to the 50th year. When he came back, it was easy. He said, that which is awake in dream, that is it. That which is not affected by any of these, that which was awake in your deep sleep, that is what is awake even now. And it is that dreams, it is that sleeps. You are that. We have finished in about half an hour. It took 101 years. 101 years. And I suppose, whatever was the... You see the point? Whatever was the state in which he was, he contemplated, the thing possessed him. The truth that was true at each stage possessed this seeker. And he had to chew it, and he had to chew it, and he had to chew it. And with every cell of his being, see the defect in it. It's not merely intellectually thinking, it doesn't seem to be right. It doesn't seem to be right. I heard it from the Tibetans that this is garbage. This is sheer garbage. Every cell of your being must be possessed by, first must be possessed by the idea that this is the truth, and then every cell of your being, not just your intellect, not just your heart feeling, every cell of it must reverberate with this uncertainty. That uncertainty is composed of faith plus doubt. That's why there is uncertainty. If the faith was not there, you are certain that it is false. If the doubt was not there, you are certain that it's right. So half of this, half of that. And that is what we call uncertainty. It is not certain, and therefore it is not real, and therefore there is no realization. And you are unwilling to drop one or the other. You are unwilling to drop the faith, saying it's all nonsense. Then of course, you are on this side. You are a real fool, which is nice. And if you drop the doubt, the faith is confirmed, then it becomes, again, you are a real seeker. You go on. But it is when this is there and that is there together, there is uncertainty. That keeps you going. And these are perhaps the three worlds that the scriptures often talk about. You have this expression in nearly every other page in most of the Yoga Vedanta scriptures. Three worlds, the Lord of the three worlds, the Master of the three worlds, conquest of the three worlds. The three worlds may mean nothing more than the waking, dreaming and sleep states. This is my waking world. This is the world of my waking life. And when I go to sleep and start dreaming, I am in another world altogether. That is my dream world. And when I sleep, that's another kind of world where there is dense darkness, total darkness. That is another world. And these three are again also known in some texts as the three bodies. What participates in the waking life world is the physical body, and what participates in the dream world, what creates the dream world, lives in it, enjoys in it, suffers in it, is the subtle body. Astral body, boom, astral projection. Subtle body is better. Sukshma sharira. And that which experiences the deep sleep state is the causal body. This is more theory than anything else. I'll merely mention it because it's not of great practical importance. There is a very famous Upanishad called Mandukya Upanishad. It's very brief and very deep and fairly enigmatic, because it's supposed to be an explanation of Om. Which it divides into four parts, A, Uma, and the Ardhamatra. and it equates each one of these three as the waking, the dream and the sleep, which is the physical world, the subtle world and the causal world. And the ardhamatra, or the that which is beyond, is the turiya or whatever it is. And also this Upanishad has become famous for two other reasons. One is, it contains one of the famous Mahavakyas, or the great expositions of truth, I am Atma Brahma. Omityedaksharamidagam sarvam tasyobam vyakhyanam bhutam bhavat bhavishyati sarvam omkar eva yaccha anyatrikalaritam tadapyomkar eva. So I am Atma Brahma. This self is the infinite. How is the self infinite? Because that self is constant in all the three states. That's the simplest way in which it can be looked at. These three states and the three bodies are related to each other. And the three bodies are also expanded into what are known as the five sheets. The five sheets, Panchakosha, K-O-S-H-A, the five koshas.